I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is May 29th, 2011. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, an interview with Newt Gingrich, entitled, I Was Doing Things That Were Wrong. The article begins, Newt Gingrich addressed his multiple nuptials and admitted affairs more head-on than he has to date, telling the Christian Broadcast Network that he sought God's forgiveness for the things he did wrong and that he now has a great marriage. Newt, that's the best thing about Christianity, isn't it? You can commit any evil, no matter how horrendous, and then all you have to do is ask your invisible friend for forgiveness, and voila, you get a whole new fresh start, just like it never happened. Murder, rape, you name it, no crime is so great that it cannot be forgiven. What moral system could possibly be better than that? Certainly not one with accountability as we have with our secular laws. As for your great marriage, I have no doubt that you said the exact same thing at the same point in your first two marriages. You remember them, don't you? Those two women whom you married and then divorced because of your extramarital affairs? But it sounds like your conscience is clear. Their pain is in the past. Your invisible friend has forgiven you, and now you have probably convinced wife number three, that you are a changed man and completely loyal. Sounds great, Newt. Now Gingrich says, there's no question at times of my life, partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country, that I worked far too hard, and things happened in my life that were not appropriate. Newt, give me a second. When I read that, I blasted out a mouthful of vanilla pudding all over my keyboard. Okay, I'm back now. So you are going to blame your adultery on America? Your passion for our country is what drove you into the carnal ecstasy of out-of-wedlock sex? Why didn't your passion for America drive you into the arms of your first wife? Or your second wife? It seems that if you were working as hard as you claim, you wouldn't have been able to muster up the energy to pursue mistresses in addition to having wives. Sounds to me like maybe you had quite a bit of energy left over after work. Maybe you weren't working quite as hard as you are trying to lead us to believe. You also said, things happened in my life. So unlike the title led us to believe, this is not an apology for bad behavior at all, is it? Now you are going to imply that these things simply happened, like things out of your control. Almost every political apology follows this script, and you didn't disappoint. But Newt, if you want to be president, you've got a lot of work ahead of you. Your God made Solomon a powerful king, but he had to support 700 wives and 300 concubines. I'll admit you're off to a pretty good start, but you had better get cracking. Newt continues, and what I can tell you is that when I did things that were wrong, I wasn't trapped in situation ethics. I was doing things that were wrong, and yet I was doing them. Newt, that was brilliant. There is absolutely no way to refute pure nonsense. Obviously, your choice to be a politician was well-founded. Newt said, I found that I felt compelled to seek God's forgiveness. Newt, you didn't feel compelled to seek God until after you had dumped your first wife for your mistress. You didn't seek God until after you dumped your second wife for your next new mistress. That is so precious. Christianity lets you slam all the muff you can get, and then after you've had your fill, you just say you're sorry. There is no way to top that moral system. I can see why it is so popular. Newt continues, not God's understanding, but God's forgiveness. I do believe in a forgiving God. Newt, what about the two women whose hearts you crushed? Did they forgive you? Do you care? don't bother to answer. We can figure it out. Newt said, and I think most people deep down in their hearts hope there is a forgiving God. Well, Newt, if they are anything like you, they had better hope so. Newt said, somebody once said that when we're young, we seek justice, but as we get older, we seek mercy. There's something to that, I think. Newt, if you had a decent set of morals, you wouldn't need to seek mercy. But then, if you had a decent set of morals, you wouldn't be sitting here trying to rationalize your way out of your transgressions. The article continues. Gingrich described his current situation and feelings about his life as the result of a spiritual journey by saying, I feel that I'm now 67. I'm a grandfather. I have two wonderful grandchildren. I have two wonderful daughters and two great sons-in-law. Callista and I have a great marriage. Once again, Newt, I think that is exactly what you would have said during your first two marriages. Wife number three should talk to wife number two and learn how it felt to take a man away from his wife only to have the same thing done to her. Wife number three probably tells herself that this time it'll be different. I wonder how many millions of women over the centuries have said that to themselves. Newt continues, I think I've learned an immense amount. But Newt, you haven't learned much about morals, have you? Not only is your personal life a travesty of dishonesty and a history of hurting the ones you love, but you also have the dubious distinction of being the first House Speaker ever to be disciplined for ethics violations. What a great role model you provide for our children. It's easy to see why you are a serious contender for the presidency. Newt continues, and I do feel, in that sense, that God has given me, has blessed me with an opportunity as a person. Newt, the only thing God has blessed you with is sexual promiscuity, a lack of ethics, and a pudgy little boy's body. Just out of curiosity, what size are your Fruit of the Looms anyway, about 48? He said, forget about all this political stuff. Newt, that is what people have been trying to tell you for years. He said, as a person, I've had the opportunity to have a wonderful life. Newt, it's too bad your ex-wives can't say the same thing. But then, from the way you rave about your current relationship, it doesn't sound like that phases you in the least. It must be great to be able to live completely free of having a conscience that might actually make you regret hurting the ones who loved you. He said, to find myself now truly enjoying the depths of my life in ways that I never dreamed it was possible to have a life that was that nice. Newt, that is so special. You just leave a trail of shattered lives behind you, but the important thing is that you are happy. No regrets, eh, Newt? I don't detect even a trace of conscience. But as long as you're getting your rocks off, who cares, right, Newt? The article continues, the former House Speaker and conservative icon is one of the likeliest potential GOPers to throw his hat in the ring, yet questions have surrounded how he'll handle questions about his marriage. My comment, well, I think we have just seen how he will handle it. No apologies, no regrets. All his philanderings were committed out of passion for his country. And his ethics violations were the result of him working far too hard for his country. You're going to have to excuse me for a minute. I have to go vomit. The article concludes, from a national press corps that will visit it once again, but also from evangelical voters in Iowa who may have reservations about his past. My final comment. Why would he have to worry about evangelicals? This entire article, with his constant mentioning of God and forgiveness, was directed at them. He wants voters to do the same. Forgive. He could care less if his ex-wives do. And now we move to the science segment. We have two stories today. Story number one. Gene analysis of primitive African Bushmen challenges assumptions of human origin. A team of Stanford University scientists using the largest ever genetic analysis of remote tribal people has determined that the human family tree is rooted in one of the world's most marginal and primitive people, the Bushmen of southern Africa. This startling conclusion challenges the long-held assumption of our origins in the East African highlands of Ethiopia and Sudan in East Africa. And it links us to a people who today live on the flat, dry, and scrubby edge of the Kalahari Desert and the outer fringes of society. Speaking in an extraordinary language of tonal clicks, their numbers have dwindled over time, and they languish at the bottom of Africa's caste social system. We have to recognize our origins in a kind of hunter-gatherer group that most people today would say are much more primitive than we are. They don't use metal. They live in the toughest kind of environment with very little water. Their hunting tools are minimal. They have a very low-calorie diet, but they are total geniuses in the bush. Over tens of thousands of years, we lost the skills they have, that they teach their children. We developed a totally different set of values, with evolution through agriculture, that bypassed these people. To explore the origins of human evolution, the Stanford research team looked inward at human DNA. Africans are the most genetically diverse people in the world, but over time, as different populations immigrated from their homeland, splintering into smaller populations within Asia, Europe, and the Americas, they carried away only small portions of available diversity. As a result, older, original populations have greater genetic diversity, while newer populations have far less. This fact forms the basis of computer-based statistical analysis in the burgeoning field of population genetics. Many other teams have used genetics to track human migrations around the globe, but there has been little study of different populations within Africa. The complete genomes of 5 southern Africans, including Archbishop Desmond Tutu, were sequenced in February. So the Stanford team expanded the collection, obtaining saliva specimens from 95 members from the Hadza and Sandowe tribes of Tanzania and the Click-speaking Komani Bushmen of South Africa. Each sample stored in a thimble-sized device held vast amounts of DNA. They also genotyped 650,000 individual variations. The team compared this DNA with 21 samples from more extensively studied tribal peoples such as the Maasai of Kenya and Tanzania and the Yoruba of Western Africa. The DNA was also compared with that of a group from Tuscany, Italy for contrast. Scientists found that the greatest genetic variation was seen in the Bushmen, suggesting that this population is most likely the original population from which all other African populations emerged. Based on genetic analysis, the team calculated that these first human populations of Homo sapiens Bushmen date back about 200,000 years. Did modern humans originate in this desperate desert environment? The study does not definitively prove that, because Bushmen once had a far larger geographic range than they do today. Several thousand years ago, as the more affluent cattle-herding Bantu populations expanded, many Bushmen perished or fled to the sub-Saharan desert. What the Stanford scientists tested were the members of the remnant populations, the survivors. Bushmen could have been more ubiquitous in Africa. Scientists don't know. They don't have any idea what the original range was, and scientists can't tell that they evolved in that exact place. If so, the findings don't necessarily contradict conclusions reached by UC Berkeley's Tim White after his recent discovery of 3 fossils in Ethiopia, widely believed to be the likely immediate ancestors of anatomically modern humans. They could have been related. We have no way to say whether they were or were not Bushmen. If we could get DNA from those 160,000-year-old skulls, that would be the clincher. But scientists can't do that yet. But because the Stanford team found that genetic diversity wanes in populations residing in the northeast of Africa, they believe that contemporary Ethiopians represent more recently evolved populations. The genetic pattern they detected is consistent with histories of human migration that describe an exodus from eastern Africa into the Middle East, then settlement throughout Asia, Europe, and the Americas. The Stanford team recently revisited the Southern African Bushmen who participated in the study and took height and skin color measurements from the people whose DNA they had analyzed. They hope to collaborate with South African scholars to see whether they can find the key genes that govern these traits. Finally, they hope to expand their study of human variation in other early human populations. Scientists don't know very much about Australian Aboriginals, Indigenous Americans, or even South Asian people, who comprise nearly a sixth of the world's population. And the second science story, the world's most powerful optical microscope, could solve the cause of viruses. Scientists have produced the world's most powerful optical microscope, which could help us to understand the causes of many diseases. The team has created a microscope which shatters the record for the smallest object the eye can see, beating the diffraction limit of light. Previously, the standard optical microscope could only see items around 1 micrometer clearly. But now, by combining an optical microscope with a transparent microsphere, dubbed the Microsphere Nanoscope, the Manchester researchers can see 20 times smaller, to 50 nanometers, under normal light. This is beyond the theoretical limit of optical microscopy. This greatly increased capacity means the scientists could potentially examine the inside of human cells and examine live viruses in great detail for the first time. The scientists now believe they can use the microscope to detect far smaller images in the future. The new method has no theoretical limit in the size of a feature that can be seen. The new nanoimaging system is based on capturing optical near-field virtual images, which are free from optical diffraction, and amplifying them using a microsphere, a tiny spherical particle which is further relayed and amplified by a standard optical microscope. This is a world record in terms of how small an optical microscope can go by direct imaging under a light source covering the whole range of optical spectrum. The common way of seeing tiny items presently is with an electron microscope, and even then you cannot see inside a cell, only the outside. Optical fluorescence microscopes can see inside the cells indirectly by dyeing them. But these dyes cannot penetrate viruses. Seeing inside a cell directly without dying and seeing living viruses directly could revolutionize the way cells are studied and allow scientists to examine closely viruses and biomedicine for the first time. Among other tiny objects the scientists will be able to examine are anodized aluminum oxide nanostructures and nanopatterns on Blu-ray CVC discs, not previously visible with an optical microscope. And now for the final segment of the show, Famous Quotes. Today, Woody Allen, born 1935, he is 75 years old. Woody Allen is an American screenwriter, director, actor, comedian, jazz musician, author, and playwright. Allen's distinctive films, which run the gamut from dramas to screwball sex comedies, have made him a notable American director. He is also distinguished by his rapid rate of production and his very large body of work. Allen writes and directs his movies and has also acted in the majority of them. For inspiration, Allen draws heavily on literature, sexuality, philosophy, psychology, Jewish identity, and the history of cinema, among a wealth of other fields of interest. Allen developed a passion for music early on and is a celebrated jazz clarinetist. What began as a teenage avocation has led to regular public performances at various small venues in his hometown of Manhattan, with occasional appearances at various jazz festivals. Allen joined the Preservation Hall Jazz Band and the New Orleans Funeral Ragtime Orchestra in performances that provided the film score for his 1973 comedy, Sleeper, and performed in a rare European tour in 1996, which became the subject of the documentary called Wild Man Blues. And now for the quote from Woody Allen. "I don't want to gain immortality through my work. I want to gain immortality through not dying."
Are you ready, Bruce? Start walking.